It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on this absolutely glorious Saturday morning in Northeast Florida, where everybody, I can tell, is headed toward the beach because the traffic on Butler was really, really definitive. Nothing going my way, and nope. Everybody going that way.
Coming from the beach was really easy.
Yep. And I can't blame.
No.
It's absolutely
neither.
Perfect out there.
Holiday weekend.
So for all of you in your car, maybe you get a chance to listen until you get to the beach anyway. People at home or on the internet or wherever you might be, welcome back. We're always appreciative that you guys are there. That's why we keep getting up and doing this over and over and over. And it's always fun. So we will sit here and discuss all kinds of fun things that we want to talk about. Unless someone bothers to pick up the phone at 904-222-8255, and we will put you on and discuss whatever is on your mind on this glorious morning. And, of course, we all know that this is Memorial Day weekend, which means that we stop and consider freedom and how it's not free. So think about that. You see service people or flags or whatever all over the place around here, and just always have in the back of your mind that it isn't free. All right. I've been for several weeks now in the opening of the show trying to make small talk for the purpose of evasion, so to speak, so we didn't have to get to the market wrap right away. That changed. So I say, let's jump on this and share some good news.
Yeah, a lot of things changed this week. It was a really different feel in the market. We saw 5 days in a row of stocks rising instead of falling. Imagine that. And it really was six because last Friday stocks rose into the close on Friday last week as well. So that was very exciting for those of us in our business and those of us with investments and 401ks and things like that.
Yeah, and every day you wake up thinking, I bet this is the day it's going back
now. Oh, yeah, especially since there was some Fed news midweek. Yeah. I just knew it was going to happen, and it didn't. So I was very pleasantly surprised on that regard. And the really funny thing is nothing really significant happened this week. I mean, you can look around, but there was you could point to the PCE report that showed a little bit less inflation than what we've been seeing, which is good, but doesn't really move the needle a whole lot yet.
People got sick and tired of selling everything.
Perhaps. I'm not sure exactly. The Fed maybe took a slightly more dovish stance on some further out rate hikes like September. So that was decent news, but it just nothing major. It was just kind of a shift in sentiment that didn't have a real cause.
But anything that's unsustainable will stop. And the pace at which our market was going down was unsustainable.
Yeah.
Because it was unjustifiable.
Well, there was a lot of bargains out there. More than a handful of stocks in the NASDAQ that were off 60-70% for not really much of a reason besides interest rates going up.
Good companies.
Yeah. So when you see things like that, it's only a matter of time before people come in and start snapping up some bargains. The 10-year yield did move slightly lower, down from over 2.8 to 2.745. So that was a move in the right direction as far as stocks are concerned. The economic data was actually slightly worse than expected, including the first quarter GDP being revised to slightly more negative than first thought. So I'm thinking there's a good chance we're in a technical recession.
Well, we mentioned that when the 1.4, negative 1.4 came out, that was too big a gap, and there's no way they're going to be able to revise that upward.
No.
All the way to zero, anyway. And, in fact, they revised it downward a little bit. And I'm with you. We may well be in a technical recession.
We might be on our way out of a technical recession at this point.
And we've mentioned that over and over, how sometimes when you're in, when you don't know it, and when the numbers come out afterwards, it says, oh, you had a recession.
All it would take would be a slightly negative GDP growth in the second quarter, which is entirely possible. I wouldn't put it at likely at this point, but possible, definitely. so we'll see what happens, and when that comes out in July, it'll be interesting.
It's going to be, again, dependent on our trade deficit number. I think
it is,
that'll be
which
the teeter totter.
Improved slightly this past month, but yeah. I don't know if it improved enough. We'll have to wait and see.
Right.
The markets were an absolute sea of green this week. It was really even difficult to find any red. The only areas I could find that didn't do well were Ethereum, which was off over 8% and is now off 63% this year.
Oof.
Yeah. And the Chinese market, which was down 1.5% to add to their negative 23% year.
Well, at least they deserve it.
Yeah, they're really struggling over there. And it's,
well, they're making all the wrong decisions.
It's so dumb. The zero COVID policy is going to kill them.
It is.
I do not understand what they're thinking at this point. It seems pretty clear that, especially with the weaker strains, letting it run through your population and give you herd immunity is the only way to get through this thing, and they are refusing to do it. So I don't know what the thinking is.
If anybody can figure out why, please share.
The NASDAQ led the way higher this week, gaining 6.8%, but the S&P was not far behind at 6.6, and the Dow was right up there as well, gained 6.2. This was actually enough to flip both the S&P and the Dow positive for the month of May.
Well, one more chance for the NASDAQ.
The NASDAQ's still down 1.6% for the month, but it's a lot better than it was last week. We've got a long way to go to finish positive on the year, but this week may have been a good start. Of course, it could just be a bounce in the middle of a bear market, mm-hmm. too. We don't know yet. Despite this week's bounce, we still have a ways to go before the S&P gets back to its moving averages. The S&P is currently 118 points below its 50-day moving average and 298 points below its 200-day moving average.
Conventional way to look at that is called oversold.
Actually, we're in neutral territory right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we climbed all the way up to neutral.
Yep. Really, until you see the S&P at levels above both of those averages, you can't really consider it a break from the current downtrend.
Right.
That's not to say it couldn't happen, but those will be the key levels to watch in the coming weeks and months. So, if you see the S&P bounce at one of those levels, that's not a good sign because it would bounce down at this point. But if you see a breakthrough, that could be a very good sign for the rest of the year. Be very fun to watch.
And historically, when we go into Memorial Day weekend with the markets being negative for the year, we have a good finish to the year.
Yeah, and just reversion to the mean at this point would mm-hmm. mean that we'd have a decent rest of the year. That doesn't mean it would get to positive, but the odds of it staying as negative as it's been are, I would say, fairly low.
Yeah.
An interesting mix of sectors led the way higher during the week, with consumer discretionary gaining 9.5%, followed by energy up 8.5, then financials up 8.3, and technology up just under 8. Why that's interesting? Because consumer discretionary is a cyclical sector that is the worst performing sector year to date. Energy, in second place, is a sensitive sector that has performed the best of any sector year to date. So the two couldn't be any more polar opposite, and they both led the way higher on the week. So really an interesting trading week.
Yeah, how do you get consumer sentiment in two buckets at once, so to speak? There, in order to spend money on luxury items, you have to have a positive attitude. But when your oil prices are getting so high and your gas prices are getting so high that everybody's complaining about it and they're complaining about the inflation rate, that would seem to be negative because they ought to stop filling up their tanks, things like that. But that's not happening.
Nope.
Which really makes me wonder about that whole recession thing. So we're still kind of on the fence. All right, a lot more to come when we get back. We'll pay some bills and don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And we do, as usual, have a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Social Security, most of you know that there was a pretty good size increase for this year of 2022, but it isn't enough to keep pace as it never seems to be. And now the earliest projection on what will happen for next year, which is, by the way, based on the third quarter change in the Consumer Price Index, so it doesn't even start to accrue until July, but they're estimating now it could go as high as about 8.6% for next year.
No way. I don't see it. I think it's going to be significantly lower than that.
I think they're going to find a way to kibosh that down a bit, too. But once again, we always will lose purchasing power. It's the way it seems to go. And that leads us to our trivia question. Since the year 2000, how much purchasing power has been lost in Social Security payments? It's a percentage number. Take a whole number, 200 or somewhere in between. But we know it's definitely happening. All right, back to the market. Any more little highlights you want to throw out there?
I want to bring this up because I heard Angela and Howard talking about it on the last show, and it has to do with the housing market. Definitely some signs that it's slowing. I don't think that we're looking at a collapse of any kind, but there is these new mortgage rates, which have risen substantially over the last 4 to 8 months. It's definitely slowing down people's appetite for new homes, and that was really apparent in the data this month. We saw a little bit of a collapse in April. April's annualized rate of new home sales came in at 591,000. That's down from 709,000 in March. So big, big drop.
Yep.
17% lower than a year ago's rate of new home sales as well. And that drop actually pushed the month supply of available homes up to 9 months. That was
haven't seen that for a while.
No, that was trending well below the. I think the historical norm is somewhere around six. So we were way below that, and now we're actually above it. That's the highest level since May of 2010. What remains to be seen is this actually a shift in the housing market, or are buyers just taking a breather and adjusting their budgets for the new higher mortgage rates? And I don't know is the answer to that.
I don't either.
I try not to take a 1 month of data and make that a trend, but it's definitely that number was a bit shocking, seeing that big drop. So I think that people do need to realize that at a 5.5% mortgage rate, historically, that's still a pretty good rate. Mm-hmm. It's not really on even the higher side of normal. So so it just the affordability is what comes into question now. But you've got a tough question. You've got another tough question to ask yourself right now. Rents have gone up with house prices. So
exactly.
Do you want to pay someone $3,000 a month to pay their mortgage, or do you want to pay $3,200 a month for your own mortgage? And it's not an easy question to answer because they both seem like way too much money.
I can't disagree with a word of that.
But that's what home buyers are faced with right now, and those are the kind of questions it appears that they're asking themselves this month because they're not putting contracts on new homes at the rate that they were.
Right. And for all you folks out there who took our advice and Angela and Howard's advice over the last couple of years and refied,
don't go anywhere.
How's that look?
Yeah.
Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen, how are y'all this morning?
Wonderful. And you?
Fine. I'm going to take a stab to set a limit for you.
Sure.
How about 33%?
That's a wonderful guess. It is, however, too low.
Okay. Well, hopefully I've given some people some ideas.
You narrowed the bracket considerably.
I do have a question, though, with respect to Social Security that maybe y'all might have some good guess off the top of your head. What percentage of today's retirees are depending solely on Social Security?
Too many.
I understand $25
Yeah, it is way, way too many.
Yeah. I don't know the actual answer to that.
I don't know either.
It got out of control, and by it, I mean personal financial planning.
There's a lot of people that take back paper.
I'm hearing, getting some feedback.
Yeah, we're getting
feedback.
Another somebody on the line also. I don't know why. Anyway, people. Too many people, I guess, forgot that Social Security was not designed to be your retirement system. It was a supplemental retirement system, and they didn't do anything. And, of course, with the lack of financial education that's been going on for decades, it has left a lot of retirees in the lurch, today, and I bet everybody knows somebody who's struggling to get by because it's just on that. So I don't know the actual answer, but I go back to what I said. It's too many.
Well, so with those percentages, that too many is getting too many more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
you're absolutely right.
And the ones that are on it are hurting more every year.
I know for some people, that's where you come in, being the reverse mortgage specialist, that discussion has to come up more and more often when people are house rich and income poor. That's what a reverse mortgage does.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine your business is pretty strong right now, isn't it?
Generally speaking, it had been. We got hit by the interest rate jump a little bit. But now it's been picked up. I mean, understand interest rates on a reverse mortgage also impact how much money is available.
Right.
Exactly.
Yep.
So there are some people who could have refinanced and paid off existing mortgages in January that can't today. They're not getting enough money
right.
to be able to do it. But those who are using it to supplement, you know, exactly what you guys do every Saturday morning, education, if people would just be willing to listen to people who know what they're talking about instead of reading, you know, Yahoo Wacko,
yeah.
you know, throwing something on a thread somewhere, you know, they thought it was, then they would be able to make good decisions. And that's what I have felt like people in your business do, is keep people from making bad decisions and hopefully make good decisions instead. And that one little bit makes all the difference in the world.
It does indeed.
So,
yeah, well, we appreciate it. That's exactly how we feel, and that's why we keep doing this.
Yep.
All right.
Have fun today. I'm continuing to listen.
Thanks for the call,
Marshall. Have a great holiday weekend. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I think I have an answer to your trivia, but before we go there, I just did a quick check on your previous caller's question.
Mm-hmm.
And according to a 2020 IRS data, it stated that only 12% of retirees receive at least 90% of their income from Social Security.
That seems way too low.
That does seem low, doesn't it? Maybe we're pessimistic.
It was a Forbes article, so, you know. I just Googled that, and that's what popped up.
Hmm. Well, I hope it's true.
While I was Googling that, I also Googled your question.
There you go.
And you're right. Your previous caller was pretty close. The answer is 40%, I believe.
You are correct. And that is really a disgusting number for those of us who are in the system, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I had never thought about it, but it's unbelievable, actually, that high of a number. I'm actually shocked by it.
Yeah, well, what happens?
I don't know how people live on Social Security, to be honest with you.
You're not supposed to. What happens is they give you an increase and they take a bunch of it back from Medicare.
And then
they tax your benefits at either 50 or 85%. Unless you're making no other money, then you get 100%, I use the term loosely, free. So you can't get anywhere. And I blame directly Bill Clinton for this one, because he's the one that took that 85% number and established it. It was never meant to pay. You were never supposed to pay taxes on it at all. When it went to 50%, at least they had this kind of loose justification that, well, your employer got a deduction for it, so you're now paying the tax that the employer saved. Okay, they'll give you a loose okay on the 50%, but there is no excuse on God's green earth to tax 85% of Social Security, and that's what they do. And that's one of the reasons that the purchasing power drops so radically over time.
Yeah.
You talk. What can you do about it?
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking the call. You guys have a
thanks
a
great for calling. I'll put you on hold. We can get your stuff.
Okay. All right.
All right. We're gonna take another break. Yeah, it goes fast, doesn't it? And when we come back, I've got some enlightening words to say about inflation protected bonds. And this came up a while back and then came up on a backup phone call, and I promised I'd get into the weeds a little bit more on it. There's really a lot more to think about and do and say to truly understand what these are. But with the inflation rate today, it's getting a lot more interest than it has in a long, long time. So we'll go through all of that in detail after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the lines are open, 904-222-8255. So whatever's on your mind, give us a call. Before I dive into inflation-protected bonds, I want to bring a few people up to date. You guys know who you are, people who are interested in the Secure 2.0 Act. And I know there are a handful. There's a little more news, nothing monumental yet, but I told you I'd keep you apprised of what's happening, and I shall. The HELP Committee is on it, and you might wonder what the HELP Committee is, Health, Education, and Labor and Pensions Committee. So that's a pretty good place for people who are interested in this thing. Now, this is not exactly a brain trust up there, as you all know.
That's shocking.
We're talking about the Senate, after all. But the heavyweights like Patty Murray, Richard Burr, are on this thing for differing reasons. And this is what gives me a little bit more encouragement, because they are the HELP Committee, but there are some other ones on it, too, that are on the case, not on the committee. And I think what's going to happen is that you're going to get three or four of these committees together, and it sounds to me like they're going to put all their ideas on the table and try to hammer out some kind of a compromise that will keep a lot of the committee people happy. You know what happened in the House. It passed 404 to practically nothing. It has that same kind of support in the Senate, and there are some little details, balance details and that kind of thing, that basically it looks to me like it's just nitpicking little details. The fundamentals, which would include the raising of the RMD age 1 year automatically, and then every 5 years go up another one, things like that that several of the people we know, myself included, were interested in that and would like to see it get done this year. I would say that nothing has happened that has taken it any further away from being passed this year, and if anything, there's probably some little incremental steps being taken where we can be hopeful, I guess. So stay tuned. Keep listening. I'll tell you whenever anything changes. And speaking of listening, people who are regulars to the show, and you know there's a lot of you out there, probably heard a phone call recently asking about I-bonds. And I said, there's a lot to know, and there's a lot to think about. But it all stemmed from a Fox Business show called Kudlow. And for those of you who are familiar with Larry Kudlow, he's really kind of a cool guy, and he's spent a lot of his life in media. He's a great economist. And he was in the White House during the Trump years as an advisor on economics. He's got a really, really good sense of humor. He's got a nice balance to his life where he's he can be kind of dour and then break out laughing. He's a very interesting man to listen to. And he quipped one day, and I happened to be listening to it, that there is a government bond now where you can earn almost a 10% yield. And you all know what CDs and money markets and regular bonds and so on are paying. And that's a long ways from 10%. So we got a phone call on it saying, what the heck's going on? So I said, well, I'll tell you what's going on, but it requires a little background. Basically, inflation bonds, or I-bonds, are called U.S. Government Series I savings bonds, where the I simply stands for inflation. Low interest rates have been plaguing our our investors, I guess, and low inflation rates have been plaguing I-bonds, because really how interesting are they when you can't get anything special for owning them? Well, that's changing now because obviously the rate of inflation is perking up. So I thought I'd go back and explain a little bit about why these things are popular and how they actually work. I-bonds, unlike the old Series E bonds and EE bonds, which I'll back up to for a minute, they carry two interest rates instead of just one. The first one is a fixed rate. And for quite some time now, the fixed rate, which is equivalent to the coupon rate of a normal bond, that's been fixed at zero, which kind of lends credence to the fact that hardly anybody was interested in these things, because if you buy them now, you're going to get, for the life of that bond, you're going to get a zero base rate. But they also have a secondary interest rate called the inflation adjustment rate, and that is changed every 6 months. On May 1 and November 1. Well, on May 1 this year, the new inflation adjustment rate came out, and it was 4.61%. Now, that's a six-month rate. So annualized, it's the almost 10%, you know, 9.6 or whatever it was that Kudlow was talking about, and it assumes something. And, of course, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, there's got to be an assumption or two made on that, and there is. So right now, you would get zero plus the 4.81 it is, and that would last for the duration of the 6 months. Well, that means from May 1 until November 1. So you've got 5 months left if you were to buy it today, where you would be getting the annualized rate of nearly 10%. Now, what happens on November 1? Well, the inflation interest rate gets reset. And if that gets reset exactly where it is now, and that's what Kudlow was implying that it would, then you will go another 6 months and you will get that same annualized almost 10% rate. If it goes up, you'll do better. But if it goes down, you will do worse. The problem, one of the problems, is that when you buy these things, you have to hold it for a year. Now, I'm not saying inflation is going to collapse by November 1, but it could be down sharply, and your best laid plans of trying to make your 10% could go away. Is that enough to scare anyone away? I don't know. Now, show listeners know that when we talk about I-bonds, we generally are talking about TIPS, which are inflation-protected bonds. We like them in the exchange-traded funds or ETFs. You can buy them under the symbols TIP, which is the longer-term ones, STIP, the shorter terms, SCHP, that's Schwab's version of the same thing. But when you buy them in an ETF, you can buy and sell at market value whenever you want to. That's one of the things we like. Now, you do pay the funds a little bit of a charge in there for managing the fund, so it does cut your return back a little bit. Plus, there are swings of the market value of these things. And the problem lately that we've been encountering with TIPS is the longer duration bonds change in value more in response to interest rate changes, which is a topic, of course, we've always brought up for a long, long number of years. You picture the teeter-totter when the one side is the interest rate, one is the bond price. When one goes up, the other goes down. So right now we're in a period of increasing interest rates, which means that the TIPS themselves have been having trouble maintaining a price, at least until the last couple of days, but yeah, I digress.
Even then, they're still down over 5% this year.
Yeah, and the same thing happens on the short term, the STIP, but it happens much less because the duration of the bonds is under 5 years. So I am leaning toward STIPS over the other ones right now. And the reason is I hope to preserve principal a little bit better than that. Will it work? Don't really know.
So far, so good.
The yields are down like 0.2 for the year or something.
Yields are, no, they're actually up 0.24 after
that changed this week.
Yeah. Okay. And the yields are very similar. The expense ratio on STIP is actually only 0.03 versus on TIPS, it's 0.19. So, okay. Right now,
all good.
They definitely look, and the volatility on STIPS are 2.1 versus 4.6 on TIPS. So in this environment, I would say lean towards STIP.
Now, you'll sacrifice a little bit of the monthly payout. Mm-hmm. They're bigger on the longer term ones. But that to me is, if you're looking to get into an inflation protected bond, I like that. But if you're looking at what the 10% thing is, now we'll go to a separate arena. And after the break, I will tell you the difference between a TIP and an I-bond as far as purchasing, holding, and all of those things, because it's very interesting and it will affect your opinion of who you are, what you're looking for, which one you should buy. And it's exactly the same, but it's different. Am I contradicting myself? I'll let you know after the break. Anyway, don't go anywhere. There's a lot to learn yet. And yes, you can do pretty well with these things. So we'll pay some more bills. Be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. Now back to the discussion of I-bonds and TIPS. If you are a holder of TIPS or S-TIPS or SCHP or whatever, anything that holds them, the bonds in those funds do not have your name on them. They have been sold at auction originally, and they're sold in the secondary market or swapped in the secondary market after that. And when you get rid of them, somebody else will own them, but you don't know who it is. You do not get your own personal interest rate out of them. But if you want to do that, you have heard us talk many times, I'm sure, about the website treasurydirect.gov. Treasury Direct is the website for buying I-bonds, among other things. Also E-bonds and double E-bonds. So a little background first, and then I'll give you the skinny on the current ones. The old Series E bonds, like a lot of us bought on payday, you know, if we worked for a big company back in the 70s, and you could have them withhold the cost of a $25 Series E bond or something like that. And a lot of people had them stacked up in their safe deposit boxes and so on. And most of those have been cashed in. They were replaced now by the Series Double E savings bonds. They pay a fixed interest rate for 20 years. If you've got an older one purchased between 1977 and 2005, they earn an interest rate that changes every 6 months. But most of those don't pay anymore. And if you find a Series Double E bond now laying around your house, go to Treasury Direct or to the Federal Reserve Bank, and you can look up if your bond is still paying. If it isn't, cash it in, because it's not doing you any good. But how are they? The old E's were bought at 50% of face value. If you remember, you paid $12.50 for a $25 bond. The double E's are at face value, and then interest is added on. That's also true for I-bonds. But the interesting part is that you can buy I-bonds in all kinds of different amounts. You can buy I-bonds from your tax return. So when they say, do you want to move your tax return forward or do you want a refund or something, one of your choices is that they will actually buy I-bonds with your tax return up to $5,000. And if it has an odd number, like if you're getting $325.12, you can have them buy an I-bond with that. Not bad. I kind of like that. There are limits to TIPS also, $5 million, and I-bonds are a little bit lower, which shows you the personal nature of them, $10,000 a year per Social Security number if you want them electronically. You can get a paper I-bond at $5,000 per year per Social Security number. So they're very flexible. The paper I-bonds can be $50, $100, $200, $500, $1,000, or $5,000. And the inflation adjustments are monthly for the TIPS and every 6 months for the I-bonds. All right, so where are we going with this? You want to get that 10% rate. You have to go to treasurydirect.gov. There you open up an account where you can purchase directly from the government. So if you want to put $10,000 in an I-bond, which is really a Series I savings bond. You just buy it there, and you will get those rates we were talking about. You'll get zero for the life of the bond. You'll get the 4.81 until November 1. You'll get whatever that rate changes to, or if it stays the same, you'll get that for 6 more months. And then the following May 1, it'll adjust one more time. Now, you have to hold that for a year. You can't sell it before that. If you want to avoid an interest penalty, you have to hold it 5 years. If you try to sell it before that, your interest penalty is 3 months of interest. So if you hold one for a year and you get all those rates you like and you want to sell it, the only smart way, and this would be because inflation really ticked down, I'd wait 3 more months and then cash it in, and you'll lose those 3 months, but you'll have collected everything else. You don't want to go back and lose the 3 months of the high interest rate from before. So it's kind of a crapshoot what you're actually going to get. But after 5 years, you can sell it anytime you want to. But remember that zero coupon rate will be on there forever if you buy those. What should any interested person do? I can't really tell you right now. It would have to be part of your personal planning. If you want something that'll mature when you need to pay the government a tax bill or something like that, you might want the flexibility of an ETF. But if you know you're going to have an income need in a year and a half or two or three or five, or just down the line, you want to ladder these things every year so you have an income stream coming in retirement, you can do that through Treasury Direct. And it does not cost you anything to buy or sell those. So it's a very, very convenient way to save for the future. What you don't really know right now is what it's going to pay you over that amount of time. Short term, yes, but the catch there is you can get that almost 10% return likely, but you can't keep it going, and you will pay a penalty to sell it. So you're flipping coins one way or the other. Personally, I think if you're dealing with an advisor, I would not tell people, at least in any account that we had set up, to go to Treasury Direct. You just do those on your own. And if you want to invest in inflation bonds and you're working with somebody like us, we would probably lead you right at the moment to the STIP or an equivalent. There are also some mutual funds out there that handle these things. So there are many ways to do it, but I would definitely do it in the form of a fund with an I-bond that is the TIP-type I-bond, not the I-bond-type I-bond. Personal versus impersonal. So it may sound a little complicated because it is. It also makes the decision-making a little bit more difficult. But your potential rewards are very good. So.
Yeah, the three-year return on I-bonds has been pretty good, or at least on the ETFs. If you look at STIP, it's been 4.5%. Mm-hmm. And if you look at regular TIPS, it's been about 4.9%. The 10-year annualized return's not so good. 10-year on STIP is 1.75 versus 1.98, just under 2% on TIP. So
they're not always great
buy and hold instruments. And there were many years there where we all knew inflation was higher than what the government was saying, but they were not going to admit it. Finally reached a tipping point this past couple of years where they actually had to admit it.
Yep.
And so now they're looking a lot more attractive. But that price on the TIP fund TIP is counteracting any increased yield. So it just hasn't. It's been a tough thing to time recently.
Yeah, you got to stay flexible. Wait for what looks like a good opportunity to sell and buy, which is not really that much different than anything else
you want
to buy and sell.
No, I think that if you're looking for a buy and hold on. If you're looking at equities, that's a little bit of an easier case to make.
Yeah.
If you look at the historic returns on, say, SPY or one of the other big index funds versus TIPS at 2%, it's not something that I'd be extremely interested in.
But for those of you who heard the Kudlow comment, yes, you can do it, but time's a-wasting because every day – if your inflationary outlook is downward, every day that you fail to go in and purchase is another day of that big interest rate that you're losing. Just remember that. All right. Most of you know Susie Orman, who doesn't know Susie Orman? Turn on the TV, and she'd been there for 20 or 30 years. And very flamboyant, very successful, has written a lot of books. And she does what we do, only she does it with a considerable amount of flair that I don't think we have. It's not to say good or bad. She just is. She says you can avoid the five most common mistakes in a stock market crisis. So I thought I'd look at those and see what Susie has to say. One, you need to start stockpiling now. And she's talking about money. She said the biggest mistake that people make in a recession is continuing to spend as normal. But if we're going into a recession or a cutback, just start hoarding some cash, and I would never disagree with that. Two, you need an emergency savings fund. Yes, you do. She likes hers a little longer. She says 9 months of expenses. I say you don't need that much if you've got invested money. Three, pay off your credit card debt. No excuses. Exactly the advice we have given to almost everyone we've ever met. Four, we really don't have to choose between selling all or none of the shares of a stock we own. You can dollar cost in by buying them. You can dollar cost out by selling them in increments. And number five, and most importantly, you cannot have money in the market that you're going to need within 5 years. Mm-hmm. Also right out of our mouths.
Always say that.
So if you want to be like Susie, it's real easy. Just listen to what we say, because she agrees with us. How about that?
She's pretty smart.
She's very smart. Absolutely. All right, it's been fun. Have a happy Memorial Day. We will be back here next week, same time, for the Bandway Financial Hour.